Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning. I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect.
Yes, perfect.
Hello.
Good morning.
Great.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning. As they say in Yiddish, a freilichen Chanukah.
That's German. Fröhliches Hanukkah.
Wir gratulieren.
Yeah. How are you?
Very good, thank God. And how are you?
Well, we're pretty good. We're fighting, but I think we're making progress.
Tell me about the progress, if you don't mind.
Well,
I just think of some progress.
Yeah, well, just yesterday, our American colleagues told us that they filed the first PCR test complaint in New York, by the way. And I think the arguments that they're making are extremely good. I haven't read all of it yet, but I will, or we will rather, have this on our website so that everybody can read up on it. So that's one piece of the progress. Other pieces are coming together. Like today, we're talking with lots of people from different spiritual backgrounds, and it looks as though that is probably one of the major solutions to this, well, pandemic, whatever, that people get together and talk with each other in community.
Well, for sure, absolutely. I mean, that's why they want isolation.
Yeah.
Mm. They want isolation so that we're not actually talking to each other, that everyone's staying home. People shouldn't go. As someone said, the War of Independence in the United States, how did it happen? Because people gathered in the churches, they gathered in the taverns, and they gathered together as families. People get together. And when you stop people from getting together, then they're not able to talk about what's really going on. They're not able to say, does this really work for us? Is this where we want to go? So, you know, that's so important, getting together and breaking the isolation. I remember, I don't know if Dr., what's his name, Wolfgang?
Hudak.
Yes, so I remember when this whole thing started, I have a background in science and virology and infectious diseases, and I was looking for anyone who was speaking some sort of sanity at the beginning of all this, and I came across his recording and the idea of making the Corona movie and stuff like that, and it was just good to hear that someone else was saying the truth.
Yeah.
And so it's good that you're here.
It's good to have you here. What is the city? Are you in New York?
I actually live in New Jersey, okay. Which is right next to New York.
But, yeah. I remember. My brother lives there. What is the situation like? Or rather, I know what the situation is like, but how do people feel? People who you talk to, how do they feel about these measures? How do they feel? Are they afraid? Obviously, some are afraid, but are there enough people who have begun to think about things and who have begun to ask questions?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of people who have begun to ask questions. I think that compliant but frustrated. They don't understand the big picture, but they're frustrated and they wish these, you know, decrees were not in place. And then you have the people that are clearly much more aware, and they're just using their common sense. It really comes down to common sense. If you don't have to be, as I'll talk about, if you want me to give a few remarks, but just it doesn't come down to any expertise in anything, really. It comes down to just common sense, understanding, looking at things and saying, does this make sense or not make sense? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a lot of people like that. I think there's a growing number of people in the United States of America, Israel, for example, I'm familiar with what's going on in Israel, in all parts of both the Jewish and the Arab populations and so forth, that are becoming more aware of what's going on.
Interesting. And what's the situation like? Do you have a very strict lockdown at the moment? What's the situation of like for religious gatherings and things?
Well, it varies from state to state. The United States, as you may be aware, it's composed of 50 different states, and each state has its own jurisdiction on this issue for now. They want to try to nationalize it in order to make it much more uniform, but each state has its own. So there's two levels to this. There is the decrees that come from the governors, and then there is the level of compliance. So you have sometimes, and there's two levels of compliance. There's compliance by guilt and pressuring people, and there's compliance by actual police enforcement. So that varies from state to state. Also varies from county to county. So the way it's, you know, like in in Germany, in every country, there's, you know, divided into regions or counties and so forth. And so in the United States, the way it works is that you have a state police force, and in each county you have what's called a sheriff. That sheriff is the is actually elected. And he is the one who's in charge of law enforcement for that county. And then he gets to decide what he's going to enforce and not enforce. So you actually have sheriffs who have written letters saying they are not going to enforce these rules. Mm-hmm. So that's a tremendously important stance for liberty, that someone will be willing to say that he doesn't see these laws as valid, or he doesn't consider them a priority. So it really varies from area to area. So in terms of the lockdowns, even back in April, and I'd like to address, you know, the effect on the religious world and the world as a whole. But those yeshivas, which is a gathering of students to learn Torah, the Torah that was given on Mount Sinai by God Almighty to Moses, that is those that decided to stay open and not comply with the public health terrorism and the public health decrees, they were basically left unaffected. The people who suffer the most are always those that comply. Mm-hmm. Because once they comply, you know, I always see it's kind of tragic, actually. You'll have business owners, small business owners, that will put up these signs and they'll say, you know, we comply, we enforce all the rules, we've enforced social distancing. Why are you so unfair to us? Why don't you treat us like the big stores that are allowed to stay open? And I always try to explain to them, you don't understand something. If you say you're going to comply, then you're now you've bought into their system. Now they will crush the person who's trying to comply, it because it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. The attempt to shut things down and to destroy humanity is really, they go for the vulnerable.
Yes. It is precisely what you're saying, and it is precisely what we're seeing here in Berlin. Those who comply, those who play by the rules, in particular, of course, those who have restaurants or hotels, they're the ones who are getting crushed. They're not the ones who are causing any problems, but they're still getting crushed. But I think slowly but surely, they're beginning to understand that they have to rise up. They cannot trust those authorities who make them comply. Let me quickly translate. Also der Rabbi sagt, dass wie bei uns in Europa auch die USA als ganzes Land, aber aus verschiedenen Staaten bestehen, sodass die Jurisdiktionen in den verschiedenen Staaten unterschiedlich sind, in den Gemeinden auch wieder unterschiedlich sind. Jede Gemeinde, jedes County hat einen eigenen Sheriff, der normalerweise für die Aufrechterhaltung der Ordnung zuständig ist. Das Besondere an den Sheriffs ist, dass sie gewählt werden, nicht von irgendjemandem eingesetzt werden, sondern gewählt werden. Und da gibt es etliche Beispiele, die sagen, von Sheriffs, die sagen, wir setzen diese Regeln nicht um. Ich habe das jetzt auch schon ein paar Mal gehört, die sagen einfach, wir machen das nicht. Bei uns muss niemand eine Maske tragen, bei uns gibt es kein Social Distancing und bei uns gibt es auch keinen Lockdown. Wir wissen, dass es einzelne Fälle gibt von Leuten, da hat er eben auch darauf hingewiesen, die sich sowieso nicht an die Regeln halten, sondern die machen, was sie wollen. Und das Interessante, was er gerade gesagt hat, ist, dass das die Leute sind, die man in Ruhe lässt. Offenbar hat man Respekt vor denen. Wir werden heute Abend ja mit einem dieser Menschen sprechen, der ein italienisches Restaurant in L.A. hat. Tony Roma heißt er. Er ist schon eine echte Institution da. Aber was auch wichtig ist zu wissen, und das ist ja unsere eigene Erfahrung hier in Berlin auch, habe ich ja gerade erwähnt, ist, dass er sagt, die, die sich an die Regeln halten, die also sozusagen sich beugen, die werden dann endgültig zerstört. So wie die Leute bei uns ja auch, die Gastronomie hat überhaupt nichts mit der Weiterverbreitung irgendeines Virus zu tun. Selbst wenn es das gäbe, wollen wir es mal unterstellen. Die Hotels auch nicht. Und trotzdem werden die jetzt vernichtet.
Ja, der hatte auch noch den Punkt, dass auch die Torah-Schulen, die sich entschlossen haben, eben offen zu bleiben, gar keine Probleme hatten.
Ja.
Das ist auch faszinierend. Also theoretisch wäre auch für uns vorstellbar, dass beispielsweise ein Kindergarten sagt, ich bleibe einfach weiter auf, ich biete das weiter an, eine Schule macht nicht zu und dann mal gucken, was passiert. Ja. Sie hatten das ja auch schon gesagt.
That's a very interesting thought here, which we're talking about. Those who don't comply, who don't want to play by the rules, but who do as they think they need to do, There's, for example, someone who we're going to talk to tonight. He runs an Italian restaurant in Los Angeles. His name is Tony Roma. He's a local hero, so to speak. He has right. He has kept his restaurant open throughout the lockdowns. He's been fined, etc., but he doesn't care. He has a lot of lawyers who really help him, and he's a local hero. So those who comply are the ones who suffer. Those who stand up are obviously the ones who are going to make a difference in the end.
No, that's 100% right. And I wanted to, you know, spend a few moments, if I could, since addressing such an important body of people. And I really appreciate everything you're doing and the example you're setting to the world, which is to really investigate what the truth is. And also, we need to take action. But today is the eighth day of Hanukkah. And there's tremendous significance to that, because Hanukkah is the story of what happened when the Greek Assyrians took over the land of Israel in the times about 2,500 years ago, that they took over the land of Israel. And even though the Jewish people were in the land of Israel and there was a temple, the Holy Temple was in Jerusalem, but the Greeks came in and they really attempted to control the population to say, okay, you know what, you can keep some of your Jewish practices, but just don't believe that it comes from God. They wanted to secularize and divide the Jewish people from God Almighty. And one of the things that they wanted the Jewish people to do was to say, write on the horn of an ox, saying that this person has no portion in the God of Israel. This was their goal. Their goal was to say that human reason, uber alles, human reason is the greatest level of humanity, and don't go after spiritual ideas. Don't go after the concept of the recognition of divine revelation, that God reveals himself to each one of us and is constantly guiding us. In addition to the overall revelation of Torah on Mount Sinai, they didn't want people to have this connection to God Almighty. So they were able to affect a tremendous percentage of the Jewish population. But there was a family called the Maccabees, Matityahu, HaMaccabee, and his sons. There were only about 11 or 13 of them. And they took upon themselves to stand up and to defy this, this coldness, this secular coldness, this way of putting human reason above everything else. And they rose up militarily against the Greek Assyrians, fought against tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands, and were able to defeat them. And not only did God make a miracle of a military victory of the small over the many and the weak over the strong, but in addition, when they came into the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, they were looking to relight the menorah, the candelabra, the eight-branched candelabra in the Holy Temple. They were looking to relight that, and they could only find one day's worth of oil to be able to relight the menorah, and it would take another 8 days to go into the farms and to harvest the great oil of the olives and to then create new oil. And God made a miracle, and the one day's worth of oil burned for 8 days. So for all these generations, we've been celebrating the holiday of Hanukkah, which is really a holiday for all of humanity, because the concept of Hanukkah in Hebrew is the word in Hebrew is Chanukah, which is from the word chinuch, and Hebrew means to educate, to guide humanity in the recognition that everything comes from God Almighty, and that we are not just here as random, chemical and physical reactions, biological as just being merely chemical and physical, but we are truly spiritual beings created in God's image. And this is the lesson of Hanukkah. And it's particularly significant that you're holding this meeting in Germany, because we see that only 80 years ago in Germany, human beings were led astray by exactly the same problem. People make a mistake and think that the Holocaust and what happened in Germany was because of anti-Semitism. But it wasn't because of anti-Semitism. It was because that God Almighty had been taken out of the school system. In Bismarck's times, they'd taken God out of the school system, and they raised generations of children that thought that the highest form of humanity was human logic. God was taken out of the picture. Once a person takes God out of the picture, then human logic can justify anything. And that's exactly what the Nazis did. The Nazis were very, very logical people. They had professors. They had great scientists, great professors, great thinkers, and great philosophers who were the basis of their thinking. So it was not an anti-Semitic spasm. What really happened was the manipulation and the hijacking of the German people, who happened to be very disciplined, very focused, and very efficient people, to corrupt them into following the public health ideology. Nazism was really about public health. What we're seeing today is the same concept. The concept of public health. What was the first thing after the Nazis took over? Within a few days, they opened a concentration camp in Dachau to put in their political opponents. But within a few weeks, they were sterilizing Germans. Non-Jewish Germans were being sterilized because they decided that they were not worthy of reproducing. And then by 1938, 1939, they were murdering and euthanizing elderly, sick, and terminally ill children and adults. This was the concept of lives unworthy of life that the Nazis were not inventing. They were actually just implementing in a very efficient way. All they had to do was then expand it and say that now the Jewish people are the next target. And they said after they finished with the Jewish people, they were going to kill all the Polish people and all the Ukrainians as a process of eliminating everyone that they did not think was worthy of living. So we have to remember that Nazism is really public health. You cannot have a concept of public health that does not lead to that level of destruction, because public health, by definition, destroys the individual and says that someone somewhere is going to make a decision of what's best for everybody, and then it's going to be enforced without any compassion, without any mercy whatsoever. And that's exactly what we see is happening. Now, there's a famous rabbi. His name was Rabbi Halberstam, Rabbi Kusiel Halberstam. He was the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And after the First World War, his father said to him that he should know that will come into the world a level of cruelty that has never been seen before, never been experienced in the world. That's a very strong statement to make, because for the Jewish people, we've been around for thousands of years. We remember the Egyptians' cruelty, the murdering of people by the Egyptians, the Nebuchadnezzar, Babylonia, the Romans, the Greeks, the Persians, everybody who's come and tried to make war against the Jewish people. So to say that there'd be a cruelty that was never experienced in the world, so terrible, it's a shocking prediction. So this Rabbi Halberstam, the Kloisenberger Rebbe, said that when he was in the concentration camps later on in the 1940s, and he was sent into the Warsaw Ghetto to be part of the cleanup crew. So he saw what humanity, when God is taken out of the picture, can come to. He said that the only thing that kept him alive was his father's prediction. Because he saw that what his father had said was going to happen was happening. What did he see in front of him? He saw the public health, the cruelty of saying it's for your safety. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not true. It's for your safety, and it will be imposed upon you, and you will be destroyed. That is public health, and that's what Nazism really is. And to those people, one of the things that I was very impressed is that when I was watching the videos of Dr. Wolfgang and the others and so forth, and a lot of them were in German, and I saw other German videos, and people were speaking right at the very beginning saying this is about fascism and they're taking over the German economy and so forth. And I was very impressed, because the German people recognize and have experienced this in real time. While it might have been your grandparents or your parents who went through this, but unlike America, where Americans have done many great things and fought for good things and so forth, but they've never experienced true tyranny in recent times. Even King George, that they made a war of independence against in 1776. He looks like a sweetheart compared to what public health is able to accomplish. And we see that today, the very Nazi definition of lives unworthy of life, we see that happening today with the whole concept of essential and non-essential. a person's ability to go make a living, that's a divine commandment. God says, go make a family, go provide for that family. And then they say, no, you're not essential. You cannot make a living. You have to starve or get money from the government, become a slave. This is a Nazi definition. So I think it's very, I just wanted to start with that because I think it's very important to A, acknowledge what you're doing and that you, particularly in the countries of Germany and so forth, have the opportunity and the wisdom of your own experience and your own family's experiences to recognize what happened was that there was this process of compulsion, this process of taking away people's ability to think independently. The truth no longer mattered. The censorship that happened in 1930s and 1933 and so forth and then increased. You know, people talk about, are we in 1930 Germany now or 1933 Germany and so forth? And I used to think, okay, well, you know, it's we could still walk around in the streets. But remember, one of the turning points was Kristallnacht. Kristallnacht was the time when they came and they destroyed the Jewish synagogues. But let's remember what happened there. They not only destroyed the Jewish synagogues, by the way, the first thing they did is they went in to the synagogues, those that were the organizers, they went into the synagogues and they took the lists of all the Jewish people, because in those days that they didn't have government records, that each synagogue and church kept its own records of the births and deaths of all the family members. So they took those lists out of the synagogues and then they burned the synagogues down. But what else did they do? They went ahead and they destroyed all the Jewish businesses and they burned all the Jewish businesses. And then they made a law that the Jewish people could not own businesses. So what everyone's looking for when they talk about the Holocaust, they're looking for something against the Jews. And they make a big mistake. If it's against everybody, the Jews and the non-Jews and the Catholics and the Muslims and everyone's being destroyed equally, they say it's not anti-Semitism, so it's okay. Somehow it's okay. It's a big lie. What we're experiencing now is like Kristallnacht on a major scale. Mm-hmm. The synagogues and the houses of worship were closed. The businesses are shut and destroyed. So they don't make a difference between whether you're Jewish or not Jewish. That's what fools people. But what's really happening is a destruction and a war against humanity. Now, I wanted to explain this. I know maybe you'll want to translate, but I'll, if I could speak and just address this, then you could decide how much you want to translate. But I want to put this in a spiritual perspective also, because this is something that the Torah, which we don't call the Old Testament because there's nothing old about it. It's we believe it's a living divine revelation that's constant. It explains that in the times of the Jewish people going out of Egypt, they went in the desert and the God sent them to Mount Sinai to receive the Torah. The Ten Commandments and the whole Torah was being given on Mount Sinai. And a nation called Amalek came to attack the Jewish people, unprovoked. There was nothing that the Jewish people had done to them wrong. They came and they attacked the Jewish people. They tried to destroy the Jewish people. What did this nation of Amalek have against the Jewish people? Amalek knew God existed, but hated God. And Amalek's goal was to eradicate the knowledge of God from the entire world. Now, that's why he wanted to prevent the Jewish people from going to Mount Sinai and receiving the Torah on Mount Sinai. Why did Amalek hate the Jewish people? Because the Jewish people were the people that God said, I'm going to give you the Torah, and you have to share this divine wisdom with all of humanity. So Amalek wanted to make sure that never happened. But this nation of Amalek has pursued and been behind every single one of the destructive wars against humanity since that time, including Nazism, communism, the Inquisition, the Crusades, everything where there was a war against humanity and a war of destruction was this nation of Amalek. What Amalek wants to do is to destroy every single human being. The Jews are always only the first target, like we see by the Nazis that they wanted to kill other people. What we need to recognize is this is not something that just happened with coronavirus. The whole concept of separating mankind from their spiritual connection, from a belief in God Almighty, has been going on for centuries. Yeah. And the goal has been to use the universities to spread a cult of worship of experts, to cool people off, to take them away from believing in God Almighty, to take people away from recognizing their own divinity, that every human being is created in God's image. And this is what a Mulik has been accomplishing all this time. So what we're seeing now with coronavirus is merely the latest, most effective worldwide attempt to accomplish this. And do you want to spend a minute to translate? I have a few more things I want to share, but and maybe you have some questions, but go ahead.
Yeah, let me translate. But before I translate, let me tell you that the other day we had an international Zoom conference with the with our Canadian colleagues who are there are a number of lawyers who are also Indians or natives, as they call themselves, very closely connected with not just the Canadian, but also the U.S. and the South American natives. And they said the exact same thing. These lawyers, a large group of lawyers, will file the first what will become an international class action complaint in Canada. They said the very same thing you said. This has been going on. This is not the first time. This has been going on for centuries. This power structure that we're confronting right now, it has not appeared overnight. It's evolved over the centuries. And in the end, he said, it used to be, because they represented so many indigenous people, it used to be cowboys and Indians. Now we're all Indians. And I think he's right, and that's exactly what you're saying too. All of a sudden, we're all Indians, and I hope we're gonna realize that soon enough. Okay, I'm gonna translate this. Der Rabbi hat eben gerade gesagt, dass heute der achte Tag von Hanukkah ist, es so ähnlich wie bei uns Weihnachten, nur ein bisschen früher. Und an diesem achten Tag gibt es eine Legende. Oh, I was going to ask, is there a happy ending to the Maccabee family story?
Well, yes, they were successful in restoring, setting aside the Greeks and establishing that victory, that miracle. Now, the ultimate victory did not occur because then the Romans came in and they then destroyed the Second Temple, and the Jews were sent into exile, which we've been now in exile for 2,000 years. Mm. But we're still waiting for the ultimate happy ending, which is that when all of humanity is going to be freed from the slavery of those that seek to rule over us.
So that's definitely worth fighting for right now.
Yes.
Okay. Also, ja, eine schöne Geschichte. Am achten Tag von Hanukkah, es gab da also eine Legende, wonach die Assyrer, die Juden überfallen haben, Krieg mit ihnen geführt haben. Am achten Tag von Hanukkah gab es dann eine Familie, die Maccabee-Familie, die aufgestanden ist und sich gewehrt hat, militärisch erfolgreich waren. Und dann wollten sie die Menorah anzünden, so eine Art Kerze anzünden, um dieses positive Ereignis zu feiern, hatten aber nur Öl für einen Tag. Dieses Öl für einen Tag reichte dann 8 Tage lang. Was der Rabbi außerdem noch erzählt, ist, dass wir, das ist ja ein paar Mal schon angesprochen worden und meiner Ansicht nach in gar keiner Weise übertrieben, dass die Vergleiche zwischen dem, was wir jetzt gerade erleben und 33 bis 45 nicht an den Haaren herbeigezogen sind. Er sagt, er weist aber darauf hin, dass damals die hier stattgefundenen Gräuel nicht Resultat des Antisemitismus waren, sondern, so wie wir es hier ja auch schon gehört haben, letzten Endes Ausfluss der Tatsache waren, dass, dass der Mensch sozusagen das Spirituelle verloren hat, dass er sich nur noch auf Ratio verlassen sollte, so wie das jetzt ja auch gerade versucht wird, uns einzuprügeln, dass die Verbindung zum, das ist jetzt meine Wortfindung, zum Kosmos verloren gegangen ist. Also der andere Teil, den wir offenbar brauchen, um zu leben, der ist ausgeschaltet worden und nur so konnte es geschehen, so übersetzt er das, nur so konnte es geschehen, dass diese Gräuel, die sich eben nicht nur gegen die Juden gerichtet haben, sondern danach auch gegen, wie wir alle wissen, gegen verschiedene andere Bevölkerungen, Rumänen, Zigeuner, dass hier eine völlige Unmenschlichkeit, darum geht es ja letzten Endes, die Oberhand gewonnen hat. Er weist nochmal darauf hin, dass diese Erkenntnis wahrscheinlich die wichtigste überhaupt ist, zu verstehen, dass man diese, ja letzten Endes diese Menschlichkeit braucht. Er hat das Beispiel dieses Rabbis Haberstamm erwähnt, der im Warschauer Ghetto mit Aufräumarbeiten betraut worden war und der diese Gräuel nur deshalb überlebt hat, weil er eben verstanden hat, dass es dahinter noch wie soll man das sagen, dass es dahinter noch eine lichte Welt geben kann und dass die wiederkommen wird. So, was habe ich jetzt vergessen?
Also einmal hatte, glaube ich, auch noch der wichtige Punkt war auch noch, dass der Halberstein, der Vater hatte, glaube ich, schon das so prophezeit oder vorhergesehen, dass da eben so eine ganz katastrophale, gottverlassene Situation entstehen würde, die eben also für die Juden insbesondere die schlimmste Leidensgeschichte irgendwie, die man sich vorstellen konnte, seit 2000 Jahren sozusagen oder noch länger irgendwie herbeiführen würde. Und ich glaube, er hatte auch noch, was auch noch sehr wichtig war, dass er meinte, dass die Reichskristallnacht, ja, wo man ja losgeschlagen hatte, dann eben auf die, wo man dann in die Synagogen eingefallen war, also die Gestapo und so weiter. Und dann haben sie dort einmal die Listen sich gezogen von den jüdischen Mitbürgern, die eben, um zu gucken, wo die sind, sodass man die dann auch drangsalieren und verfolgen konnte, weil eben die Namen der jüdischen Menschen eben nicht in Religionszusammenhängigkeit sozusagen zu finden waren in den Einwohnermeldeämtern, sondern das war eben exklusiv in den Synagogen zu finden, sodass sie wussten, wer die sind. Und dann sind sie ganz gezielt auch auf die losgeschossen und haben halt auch deren Geschäfte zerstört. Ja? Und jetzt sagt eben der Rabbi, was ich in einem sehr wichtigen Punkt finde hier, wir sind eben im Moment eigentlich in einer weltweiten Verfolgungssituation, die sich ja noch nicht mal mehr auf einzelne Gruppen, denen man jetzt genozidmäßig zu Leibe rückt, sondern wir haben es eigentlich mit einer weltweiten Konstellation der Art zu tun, wo eben jetzt überall alle Geschäfte, unabhängig davon, ob die Leute jetzt Juden oder Christen oder Moslems oder wer auch immer sind oder was auch immer, welche Hautfarbe sie haben oder welche Sprache sie sprechen, es wird auf alle gleichzeitig losgeschossen und deren wirtschaftliche Existenz zerstört und damit eben eine ganz totalitäre Situation herbeigeführt.
Ein wichtiger Bericht, den ja noch so ein wichtiges Beispiel war. Was wir gerade gehört haben, ist das Ereignis auf dem Sinai. Das heißt, erzählt eben, dass nach der Flucht aus Ägypten, aus dem Auszug, das Volk Israel die Tora, also die Gebote Gottes bekommen hat auf dem Sinai. Und dann, als sie vom Berg runterkamen, angegriffen worden sind von einem Volk, den Amalekitern. Und die Frage ist, warum haben die das gemacht? Dieses Ziel war die Vernichtung des Israels. Und Israel hatte aber sozusagen überhaupt keine Verbindung zu diesen Menschen, hatte denen gar nichts getan. Es gab also keinen Anlass. Aber die Amalekiter waren religiös eben, sie wussten, dass es Gott gibt, aber sie waren Gottes Feinde sozusagen. Sie wollten eben diese Verbindung, diese göttliche Verbindung, die entstanden ist zwischen Gott und Mensch und dem Volk Israel und Gott, zerstören, weil die Mission natürlich auch die war, dieses Gebot in die gesamte Menschheit hineinzutragen. Und er sagt eben, dieser Angriff, dieser Versuch, das Volk Israel zu vernichten, war eben der Versuch, die Verbindung zwischen Gott und Mensch grundsätzlich auf der ganzen Erde zu vernichten. Und deswegen waren die Juden sozusagen das Volk der Völker, ja, sie waren sozusagen das Erstbeispiel und das setzt sich dann eben fort in den Epochen aller Zeiten und jedes Mal, wenn sozusagen eine solche Gesundheitsideologie zum Angriff bläst, ja, und die Vernichtung der Völker angeht, egal jetzt in welcher Epoche und welcher Zeit, dann ist das eigentlich wieder der Krieg Amaleks gegen diese Verbindung zwischen Gott und Mensch. Und da ist das ist sozusagen der Schlüssel eigentlich zum Verständnis für alle diese Dinge, die wir jetzt erleben. Und das, was jetzt passiert unter dem Namen Corona, ist eben schlicht einfach jetzt zum ersten Mal die universale Versuch, diese geistige, diese Kindschaft zwischen den Völkern und Gott zu zerstören.
Und da ist mir dann eingefallen, dass uns die Kanadier vorgestern dasselbe gesagt haben. Die haben uns gesagt, das ist, also genau wie der Rabbi das eben erklärt hat, waren die Nazi-Zerstörungen, die menschlichen Zerstörungen, die angerichtet wurden, maßgeblich unter dem Deckmantel von Volksgesundheit versteckt worden. Und unter diesem Deckmantel sind wir dann bis hin zur Euthanasie gekommen. Ich meine, ziemlich schwer, das auszusprechen, aber die Sache mit den Duschen, das ist nun mal so und das ist damals damals alles unter dem Deckmantel von Gesundheit in perversester Form passiert. Was die kanadischen Kollegen dann gesagt haben, ist, die das Ganze geschichtlich durchdrungen haben und die erste internationale Class Action in Kanada erheben werden. Die sind da schon sehr weit gekommen. Fangen an mit den Indianern, weil sie die ganze Zeit vertreten haben. Da geht es um Genozid, vor dem sie sie schützen müssen. Gehen dann weiter über in weitere Berufsgruppen, die daran gehindert werden, ihren Beruf auszuüben, und werden dann das Ganze so machen, dass international jeder, der durch diese Drosten-Test, PCR-Test induzierten Lockdowns geschädigt wurde, sich anschließen kann. Weil sie sagen, es war mal früher so, dass wir Cowboys and Indians gespielt haben. Die ganzen Indianer, die letzten Endes nicht durch die Cowboys, sondern durch den weißen Mann sozusagen, übrigens auch im Wege vergifteter Decken, ne, da pockeninfizierte Decken vernichtet wurden. Jetzt sind wir aber nicht mehr Cowboys and Indians. Jetzt sind wir alle Indianer, weil wir alle in Gefahr sind. Deswegen müssen wir uns wehren. Okay. Sorry, it took me so long.
No, no, it's okay. You know, so what is the real goal of a Moloch? Moloch wants to eradicate the knowledge of God from the world. And one of the main ways that it makes a war on this is in the war on being the first commandment that God gave all humanity is to be fruitful and multiply, which means to have children. And a person is meant to have, in God's world, as many children as possible. And we see this as the natural order of things. For example, we see, if you go in the springtime, you see the trees are full of seeds. And the seeds, just millions and millions, hundreds of millions, billions of seeds just going out into the world to plant new trees. This is the way every living thing occupies itself with bringing new life into the world. And this is God's command to humanity. Now, interesting thing is, why does God need to give us a commandment to have children? God doesn't tell us to take every breath or to drink water, because what happens when a person starts overthinking things, they start to say, oh, you know what? Maybe the world doesn't have enough space. Maybe there's not enough food. Maybe college is too expensive. Maybe they should get married later. Maybe they don't want to get married at all. This is all the lies of the cult of scarcity. So what it does is it takes a person away from bringing children into the world. Now, this is the war of Amalek. This is something that they've been campaigning on for decades, and really for hundreds of years. In the late 1800s, there was an Anglican minister in England. He was a writer, Thomas Malthus, that he wrote a book and books about saying the world population in the 1800s was too big, and they would have to reduce the world population through suffering, through warfare. And this has been the policy of those that want to fight against God and fight against humanity, has been to reduce the world's population. Now, that's what the Nazis did, and that's what the communists did. The estimates of the number of people that between the Nazis and the communists killed is about 500 million human beings were eliminated in the last 100 years. And that 500 million people is only a small percentage of the actual number, because all those people would have had children. They would have had many, many children. And we're talking about billions and billions of people that don't exist now because of this war against God, this war against humanity. And we could see that this is going on all around the world, and it's funded by the very same people that are funding the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization is one of the prime implementers of this war against having children. In fact, the current head of the World Health Organization is not only a Marxist terrorist, he was a member of a Marxist terrorist group in Ethiopia, but who opposed him when he was running to become the head of the World Health Organization? His fellow Ethiopians were opposed to him becoming the head, because they said what he did when he was the Minister of Health in Ethiopia, he introduced the concept of birth control to the Ethiopian girls. He tried to get the Ethiopian girls to get married later and to have fewer children. This is a war against what they believe. This is what every human being believes naturally, and really God's command is that every human being is worthy of replicating. We should be bringing more good human beings in the world just like ourselves. And that applies to every single human being. So this person who is head of the World Health Organization now, he was making a war against that in Ethiopia. In addition, Mr. Gates has said that the world population growth is too high and needs to be reduced. And there's definitely many things we could talk about, the efforts to get people to believe the idea that the world is a place of scarcity. And this is a war against the whole idea of God. God provides abundance for every single human being. When you have a child, you have no idea how you're going to take care of that child. You have no idea how the child is going to make his way in the world. But you trust in God that God is going to take care of that child. When the cult of scarcity comes along and says there's not enough, they say, no, don't have the kids. It's too expensive. Maybe only have one child. You see, if your person only has one child, they're actually reducing the world population by 50% because they've taken two people and they made only one from that person. And of course, if a person doesn't get married at all, does not have children, then that is advancing this war. And this is something that's been going on. And really, that's the real goal. While they have all kinds of, the Nazis had all kinds of excuses, the real goal is the population reduction. Now, the reason I want to bring that, make that so important, is so important to understand that, is that we could talk all day about masks, wearing masks, not wearing masks, take the vaccine, don't take the vaccine, open our business and close the business. The truth of the matter is those that want to bring this tyranny on humanity, they don't really care at the end of the day whether we wear our mask. What's more important to them is that we have fewer children. That is the most important thing. And they are working every way possible to control and to influence people in every way of imaging. The images that they have, for example, images of women that are so thin that they, a woman, if she's too thin, it's difficult to be fertile. It's very difficult to have children. They've completely changed the mentality into a mentality in this world today of that not having children is the greatest level of a person's existence, which is exactly the opposite of God's view of the world. So we have to remember that when we're looking at this, that well, that's what their ultimate goal is. The goal of the vaccines is directly and immediately is to control the population, to bring everyone into a control system where you cannot go and you cannot do and you cannot travel and you cannot go to the house of worship. You cannot go to school unless you comply with this public health system. But ultimately, whether it's through vaccines or just through controlling people and telling them that they can't have more children, remember that in China, the one child policy, and now it's temporarily a two child policy, is carried out by the public health system. It's carried out by doctors and nurses that a woman has to bring proof every month that she's not pregnant. This is what happens when you create a structure where you have to prove that you have a green pass, that you are not coronavirus positive, or you have a vaccine. Once that is in place, they will use it. They have said clearly that their goal is to reduce the world's population, to particularly they put it in saying they're going to reduce the rate of expansion. But when you're going to reduce the rate of expansion, then you're going to actually start reducing the rate of births. And in the United States of America, in New York City, right now, 60% of Black pregnancies end in abortion. That means for every 10 potential human beings, Black human beings in New York City, 6 out of 10 of them are eliminated, and only 4 of those 10 potential human beings come into existence. These are the same people that are pushing the whole coronavirus story. They're pushing the entire lockdowns. They're pushing the vaccines. They're pushing the testing. They have in mind, and they're also pushing, the same people are pushing euthanasia. They eliminate the elderly, the sick, the terminally ill. This is their unified policy, is a unified policy against human life. Now they'll tell you and they'll lie and they'll say, oh, we have to, you know, coronavirus is so deadly, we can't let even one person die from coronavirus. It's all a lie. It's all a myth because they're killing many more people. They're pushing this whole concept of reducing the world's population. Now, I wanted to speak about what happened in with the rabbis. Do you want to translate and then I'll speak about what happened
first? Yeah. Rabi hat uns jetzt nochmal darauf aufmerksam gemacht, was man bisher immer nur irgendwo hinter verschlossener Tür gelesen hat, nämlich, dass es hier um Bevölkerungsreduktion geht. Das ist auch gar kein Geheimnis mehr, denn Bill Gates hat das mehrfach öffentlich gesagt. Sein Vater kommt aus, der letztes Jahr erst gestorben ist, kommt aus dieser gesamten Idee der Bevölkerungsreduktion. Er weist jetzt gerade darauf hin, dass in New York die Erziehung der Schwarzen so gut in Anführungsstrichen funktioniert hat, dass 60% der Schwarzen ihre Kinder nicht bekommen, sondern abtreiben. Also nur jedes vierte Kind wird faktisch, vier von zehn wird nur geboren. Und er sagt, das Ganze ist ein Thema, was sich über die Jahrhunderte durchgezogen hat, immer wieder unter dem Deckmantel der Volksgesundheit, Bevölkerungsreduktion, Volksgesundheit. Schon in den 1800er Jahren hat es einen englischen Writer gegeben, der damals schon behauptet hat, die Bevölkerung ist viel zu groß.
Bitte?
Malthusius war das, genau. Die Bevölkerung ist zu groß. Das ist immer wieder aufgetaucht. Rabbi weist aber darauf hin, und das ist, glaube ich, eine über die Religionen, die einzelnen Religionen hinausreichende Idee, steht ja irgendwo in der Bibel, seid fruchtbar und mehret euch, weist darauf hin, es hat bisher immer nur falsche Vorhersagen dahingehend gegeben, dass die Welt nicht ausreichend groß ist und dass die Ressourcen nicht ausreichend groß genug sind. Und unter diesem Denkmantel der Volksgesundheit hat es immer wieder massive Versuche gegeben zu Bevölkerungsreduktion. Allein die Nazis und die kommunistischen Regime, Stalin hat ja auch eine Menge dazu beigetragen, haben 500 Millionen Menschen das Leben gekostet. Das Ganze, was jetzt abgeht, diese Bevölkerungsreduktion, wird bezahlt und unterstützt von der WHO. Man kann nicht oft genug betonen, eine rein private Organisation, hat nichts mit staatlichen Institutionen zu tun. Und der Leiter, ich nenne die immer die, I call them the Three Stooges, you know, Drosten, Wheeler, our equivalent of the of Fauci, and then you have Tedros, the Fall Guys. Der Tedros ist der Chef der WHO, ist Mitglied einer, oder war es zumindest, Mitglied einer marxistischen Terrorgruppe. Seine eigenen Leute in Äthiopien haben ihn wegen Völkermordes versucht zu verfolgen. Und nun ist er eben Chef der WHO. Also dieser Kult des Mangels, darauf weist der Rabbi hin, der ist frei erfunden. Es gibt diesen Mangel, so jedenfalls nicht, dass man sich besser verhalten sollte und die Welt nicht mit irgendwelchem Müll zuballern sollte, das ist ja völlig klar. Aber der Mangel, der hier benutzt wird, um die Bevölkerungsreduktion zu propagieren, der existiert nicht. Und das Thema der Impfungen, der Vaccines, ist nicht Gesundheit, sondern Kontrolle, Bevölkerungsreduktion.
And I would like to add a thought, because I think, you know, when you said also they're killing the obviously, I mean, with these dangerous vaccinations, you know, a lot of people might get really harmed and might even die from, especially in the old people's homes. And so I think it's also, at the same time, it's, you know, with all these measures in place, it's at the same time kind of killing what you would call this, like, Mitgefühl, you know, like...
Compassion,
like, you know, taking out, you know, this, that there are people who are maybe at this point in life are not so fortunate, you know, they suffer, they're old and all this. And instead of, like, what we talked about, love before, you know, like taking care of your neighbors and your common human, basically, you know, that you would then, you know, that it also kills these kinds of feelings, you know, that it's eradicates basically, like, you know, love and
empathy,
compassion, and also this feeling of, like, that we as people, we are strong, but we're at the same time fragile, you know, and we depend, we're here for a certain amount of time, and we are you know, always vulnerable, and this is also part of what we are, and this is also part of our beauty and what we're meant to be, because this also makes us able to see the weakness and the sickness in someone else, and usually, if we're not completely deformed, would compel us to help this person, you know, and then it gets into, like, also as I see it, like some sort of spiritual, I help you, and therefore I also get love back from you. And I mean, you know, it's like a combination. And this whole like rhythm is like cut off when you go that down that road of like destroying and you know, killing people and like making life shorter than it should be and all these things.
Right. Well, that's a very, very important point. And that's what's happening now. Meaning to say, the killing of people is the end result of a process of desensitization. And I wanted to address what happened with the rabbis and the synagogues and the yeshivas and so forth, that they were approached in March and they told that if they don't close down the synagogues, or they don't close down the yeshivas where the students come to learn together, then there was going to be this, you know, people were going to die. There weren't enough ventilators in the hospital. And when the rabbis said, well, you know, does it make any sense? They were then terrorized with the question that was, well, Rabbi, do you want to take responsibility for all the people that are going to die if you keep your synagogue open, if you keep your yeshiva open? And that's a very, very difficult question to answer because a person it's a manipulative question. Who, first of all, says that I'm responsible? God is responsible for every human being. And the rabbis who were strong enough to say they're not going to be terrified by that question were able to keep open. But the next question, if the rabbi got past that question, they would say, well, okay, Rabbi, do you want to be responsible for the terrible way the Jewish people will appear in the eyes of the non-Jews? Because here is a Jewish rabbi, he has his synagogue open and everyone else is closed and everyone's going to say you're endangering the world. And the rabbis didn't know how to answer that also. So many of them closed. And of course, it's all falsehood because every human being is responsible for their own health. And number two is that by doing the right thing, you can never desecrate God's name by doing the right thing. If you keep your synagogue open, you keep your yeshiva open, which have been open for thousands of years, people are going to respect that. But really what happened in terms of your point about the compassion is this was built on a public health campaign that's been going on for years. And there's two aspects to this. And I believe this is happening in every single community, by the Christians, by the Muslims, by the Hindus, by the Native Americans, everywhere you turn. And it's been going on for decades and really for hundreds of years. But that is, number one, the idea that they try to say that you have to believe in the experts. So a rabbi, instead of saying that as a teacher of Torah who studies God's spiritual divine wisdom, but we believe the Torah has all the answers for humanity in it, he's then taught, well, you know, if it comes to a marital problem, you have to send the couple to a psychologist. If you have a medical problem, you have to send everyone to a doctor and do whatever the doctor says. That's replacing God's wisdom with a secular, godless thinking process that does not look at the truth. It looks only about, like Freud's goal was to separate man from his soul and separate man from his creator. So that's number one. Number two is that's been a long-term process. About just over a year ago, 2 years ago, there was a measles epidemic. And they came to the rabbis and said, you've got to make sure that every single child is vaccinated against the measles. Now, there are many families, particularly the more independent thinking families, that researched the measles vaccine and felt it was not necessary, either because of side effects or because of that not necessary in terms of the risks of the disease and so forth. This is a disease that all of humanity had received in the past generations and very, very low death rates and so forth. Anyways, what happened was, whatever their reason was, these rabbis were pressured to make public health more important than anything else, to the extent, and this is really shocking, but I think it's important to understand what happened, that these rabbis who are the ultimate compassionate people give themselves day and night to help families that are available for people spiritually and help them in the physical realm, also help them find jobs, you know, helping in every aspect possible, giving of their lives and their souls to help their fellow human being. They then kicked those families out of schools. They said the children cannot come back to school if they don't vaccinate. They said they cannot come to the synagogue if they don't vaccinate. That is cruelty. And these parents and these families were devastated. They were literally thrown out of the Jewish community because they were not following the public health decrees. So this goes exactly to your point about the compassion. a natural compassion would be. These are rabbis who would take into their schools kids who don't have any money, that come from families that are broken families, and the kids would be disruptive to the school. They would do everything compassionate to make sure a child has a proper Torah education. And yet all of a sudden, it was put into their heads that they have to throw out a child who's not vaccinated. And the ironic thing is, some of these kids would come from families where the families were paying full tuition. These are private schools, you know, the government doesn't pay for these religious schools. The families are paying full tuition. The kids are well-behaved. They're top academic achievers, and they were still thrown out of school. So you could see how the whole world is turned upside down, that someone who is so compassionate can be taken and manipulated and turned into a person who would be so cruel that he would throw his own, from his own congregation, he would throw the children out into the school. And by the way, you have to understand something, how cruel this is. It's not like there's another school the kids could go to. In many of these communities, there's only one Jewish school. Or if there's a couple or two or three Jewish schools, or even more, they are all following the same public health decree. So you're now saying a kid has left in the open with no Torah school to go to. This is the cruelty that could come about through public health ideology. And we see that only a short time later, this level of cruelty was now taken to the next level, that these same rabbis were approached again and told they should close their synagogues, they should close the schools. Do you realize in the measles epidemic, they only threw a small number of kids out of schools? Now in coronavirus, they threw all the kids out of school. They shut down all the synagogues. No one was allowed to come and pray. So it shows you the devastating, torturous cruelty of public health, that compassionate people in a very short period of time could be turned into doing cruel things, and the cruelty only increases. It increases once they got into the desensitization that they could throw 10 kids out of school. Now they could throw all the kids out of school and leave them without any education, leave them just wandering the streets, and that's literally. So that's what's so important to recognize. Now, I wanted to also address this concept of what's really going on over here, because we talk about the masks and then they told everyone they have to wear masks, they should close their businesses. And what's really happening is the World Health Organization, the Centers for Disease Control, and you can read this in their vaccine playbooks, in their corona pandemic playbooks, they're always trying to use religious leaders, spiritual leaders, respected people, trusted people, as the ones that deliver the message. Excuse me. And in fact, in New Jersey and in many of the states, they were able to convince many of the rabbis to close their synagogues before the governors even put into effect any executive orders to close down gatherings. So the rabbis, the religious leaders, the trusted people become the battering ram to use that trust to destroy the people. And that's what we have to be aware of. And that's what's happening now also with the vaccines. The rabbis were used to convince everyone to close the synagogues, to close the yeshivas, to wear masks, to close their businesses, to disrupt their family life, to not visit their parents, to not have guests over for the Passover Seder, to not go visit the sick, and then to go to frequent testing, which I've been warning about. Testing is a trap. It's trapping everyone in the idea of this constant acknowledgement of public health, and you have to prove that you're healthy. You have to prove you're healthy every week. And now the vaccine. So they're using the rabbis. And right now there's a major battle going on in Israel, in the United States, where the rabbis who are the closest to the public health system are coming out and saying, everyone should take the vaccine. The vaccine is safe. Everyone should take it. Now, I know that you have a lot of experts talking about the vaccine and the dangers of the vaccine. And, you know, there are definitely unknowns about the vaccine. But I see that there's a bigger problem with the vaccines. I'm not going to really get into the details of the vaccine, but the bigger problem is, number one, that we know that these people are making a war against having children, and they've been doing research for decades on how to create fertility vaccines that will stop a man and woman from having children. This is their ideology. Stop the world population from growing and cause it to be reduced. So this is who's funding the vaccines.
We don't know necessarily, will this vaccine right now cause any problems? I don't know for sure, but I don't trust people who have an agenda that's against God. The other issue is that what's even more dangerous is this whole system where you have to show up for your vaccine every 3 months. You cannot go to the store. You cannot go to the synagogue. You cannot go to a house of worship. You cannot go to the schools. That's where the real danger is. We always have to watch out when we're put into a small, narrow argument. That's by design. They know that there's going to be people opposing the vaccines. They want us to argue all day against the vaccines. They don't care what we say against the vaccines. All they care is they get people into the idea that this is okay to then control the population through whether you are healthy, not healthy, whether you're vaccinated or not vaccinated. I want to address the what I would like to suggest from my background. By the way, I'm also, in addition to being an Orthodox rabbi, I'm also an attorney, and I studied molecular biology and virology and infectious diseases at the University of California, Berkeley. But I don't like to mention those credentials, because my goal is to show that every human being has all the credentials that are necessary in this generation. All you need, there's only two credentials today. One is honesty, and the second is common sense. So I don't want us to set up a new group of experts to replace the old experts who are lying. We have to bring to the recognition of every human being that you have the ability, your own common sense can show you what's right and what's wrong, in addition to obviously God's divine wisdom that is really not only speaking to us through the Torah, but speaking to us on a daily basis. We could hear, we know what's right and wrong. Every moment God's speaking to us. So I'd like to address the solution, but if you want to take a moment to translate.
Was ich gesagt habe, eingangs vielleicht. Ja, mach. Also ich hatte jetzt noch mal die Frage aufgeworfen, ob wir nicht in dem Moment, wo jetzt diese, also wo es darum geht, auch die Alten und Kranken und wer sonst nicht dazu gehören darf, irgendwie quasi auszumerzen, wie will man sagen, ob da nicht eben auch insgesamt die Mitmenschlichkeit, ja, das Gefühl für den Nächsten, die Nächstenliebe, die Liebe, über die wir vorhin sprachen, eben auch systematisch sozusagen zerstört wird und die Menschen eben immer brutaler und immer, wie will man sagen, unmenschlicher sich einfach verhalten, ob das nicht auch gleichzeitig ein Prinzip ist, was darin sehr stark angelegt ist, auch aus dieser Entfernung von Gott oder wie immer.
Und da hat er eingehakt und dann darauf hingewiesen, dass es zwar erstaunlich ist, aber dass es tatsächlich immer wieder versucht wird von den Regierungen, die solche Seltsamkeiten durchsetzen wollen, die gerade die religiösen Führer zu gewinnen, weil man weiß, dass die Menschen auf die religiösen Führer vertrauen. Er hat das Beispiel genannt der Masernimpfungen vor ein paar Jahren. Die wurden dann zur Pflicht gemacht in den USA. Und auch da wurden die Rabbis benutzt, um eigentlich mitfühlende, compassionate Leute, eigentlich mitfühlende Leute, um dabei mitzuhelfen, die Menschen zu zwingen, sich gegen Masern impfen zu lassen. Diese eigentlich mitfühlenden Rabbis haben sich dazu manipulieren lassen, die Nicht-Geimpften, den Nicht-Geimpften keinen Zugang mehr in die Synagogen, aber auch in die Schulen zu geben. Leute, die sehr gut ausgebildet sind, das sind private Schulen im Übrigen, teilweise teure Schulen, teilweise aber auch Kinder, die kein Geld haben, denen bis dahin geholfen wurde, wurde von den Rabbis nicht mehr geholfen. Die wurden so desensitiviert, so hat er es genannt, Desensitization, so desensitiviert, dass sie jetzt für diese große Runde, also die Corona-Runde, leichter dazu zu bringen waren, mitzumachen bei der Ausgrenzung von Leuten, die sich nicht impfen lassen wollen. Er weist darauf hin, dass wir, er selber weist auf seinen Hintergrund hin, er ist nicht nur Rabbi, sondern ist auch Anwalt, hat eine Ausbildung als Molekularbiologe, also als Wissenschaftler, und er weist darauf hin, dass die Wissenschaft allein, also die Vernunft allein, uns hier nicht weiterführen kann. Sonst müsste ja jeder alles studieren, wenn er überhaupt in der Lage sein wollte, mitzudenken, sondern genau, by the way, that's the same thing Lord Sumption of Great Britain said, the former high judge of the British Supreme Court. He said, we all have a head on our shoulders and we should be able to connect the dots. We should be able to use our heads in order to understand what's going on. All of us can do that. Also er sagt, er weist darauf hin, genau wie Lord Sumption, dass wir alle in der Lage sind, unsere eigenen Schlüsse zu ziehen aus den Tatsachen, die wir sehen können. Wir müssen sie nur zur Kenntnis nehmen. Und dass es jedenfalls nur zweier Dinge bedarf, um die Dinge, die gerade passieren, zu durchschauen, nämlich einmal Ehrlichkeit, Honesty, und zum anderen Common Sense. Genau wie Lord Sumption sagt, man muss den Kopf dann letzten Endes aber wohl aus der Erde rausziehen, sonst wird es nicht möglich sein, die Zusammenhänge zu erkennen. Und er weist nochmal darauf hin, dass es ganz offensichtlich darum geht, die Bevölkerung zu reduzieren mithilfe dieser Impfungen, weil das die Agenda ist von denjenigen, die das besonders pushen, insbesondere Bill Gates ist bekannt dafür, sein Vater ist bekannt dafür, es waren Eugeniker, das kann man hier ergänzen, also jemand, der an der Reduktion von Bevölkerung interessiert war. If I remember correctly, Rabbi, his father, Bill Gates' father, was, I think he promoted, what is this program here in Germany? This is called, irgendwas mit, it's something, family planning, right. Family planning. Und dieses, der war in diesem family planning, wir würden das wahrscheinlich als Pro Familia oder sowas ähnliches bezeichnen. Nur das war was ganz anderes. Da wollte man angeblich den Schwarzen beibringen, wie sie ihre Familien planen können. In Wahrheit wurden die massenhaft sterilisiert. So that was, in truth, it wasn't family planning, it was sterilizing the black people, right?
Well, there was some sterilization going on, and there was also the introduction of birth control and the promotion of abortion.
Yeah.
Actual abortion. Mm-hmm. That was something that the Planned Parenthood really, and in conjunction with the Centers for Disease Control also, one of the first things the Centers for Disease Control did in the United States, and they're very proud of this, is that they went into the black hospitals in the southern United States and they said to the ladies, after they gave birth, they said, you know, you should wait until you have another child. They introduced the whole concept of spacing children, birth control, and it's all about health. You know, they say it's healthier for the woman and all these kind of things that people have bought into. But the fact of the matter is they were lying to people to try to convince them to change their way of living, which was to be full of love, to be full of life, spiritual people bringing more children into the world. They wanted to destroy that. And they've done that in other countries also, by the way. In India, they have a whole campaign that's going on since the 1970s to say that, and I saw a poster that says, shows a picture of a father and a mother with a lot of children, and it says, big families, big problems. Next to it is a picture of a father and mother and one child, and it says, few children, you know, one child, happy life. And it actually, this campaign actually works. I spoke to a Muslim fellow from India, and, you know, Muslims are generally have children. And I said to him, how many children do you have? He says, one child. I said, one child? He said, yes, big families, big problems. One child, no problems. Life is so much easier. So this campaign of these health organizations that have been going into Africa, going into India, you see, they took care of most of the West a long time ago because they educated all of us in school. They said the only reason people had big families in the 1800s and before that, because they needed people to do farming. Now that we don't have farms, we don't need so many kids. These were all lies. The reason that people have big families is because when you have love and you have love of life and love of God and love of each other, you bring more people into the world. It's a great world. It's a great life. That's why they had big families. And that applies still today. So now, today, most people in the world, in the Western world, are voluntarily only having zero or one or maybe two children. But you still have a few parts of the population that didn't get the message yet. That's, let's say, in India, in Africa, and in the religious Jewish community, and in the religious Christian community. That's why they're targeting now all these health actions, the AIDS and the women's, what they call women's health, which is really a euphemism for teaching abortion, teaching birth control, and in the black population in Africa, they're doing it in India, and they're doing it now, and it's definitely infiltrating into the Christian and the Jewish communities. So I wanted to address
Also, I just want to, before I address the solution, I wanted to mention one other thing. We started talking about the Germans and the Nazis and so forth. And one thing that has become very forbidden, verboten today, is to talk about the Nazis. You can't talk about the Holocaust. You can't talk about the Nazis. And you can't say that anything's happening today is like the Nazis or it has anything like the Holocaust. And I want to tell you something. It's a lie. We have to talk about what's true. And I want to say something, that those people who say we can't talk about the Holocaust and say that anything resembles the Holocaust, those are the real Holocaust deniers. Yeah. You see, they go around chasing. Someone argues whether about the number of Jews that were killed. Those people, they make it, you know, they chase after them and they make the whole distraction about how many Jews died and so forth. The real issue is, what possibly could have led to a situation where human beings were taken so far astray that they were able to be corrupted into, number one, tricking an entire population into doing it, and tricking another population into going along with it. Because remember, the Jewish people mostly got volunteered and went along, did not resist, because they were told by the Germans came in, the Nazis came in with a very sweet smile. They said, if you just do this one little thing, then it's going to be okay for you. And they convinced what was called the Judenrat, these committees of Jewish leaders, to be the ones to convince the Jews to follow along. If only you're going to the trains, it's to go to a better place. They were convinced until the last second. Do you realize that even people don't understand this, that among the German population, even among the Nazis, they didn't understand what the final solution was going to be. Only the very few top leaders, Hitler spoke against the Jews, but people didn't imagine that it was going to be some sort of solution. The Jews were the problem, there was going to be some sort of solution, but they didn't realize in Germany that that meant killing every single Jewish person, God forbid. They didn't understand that, and they actually hid it from the German people, and it was only the acceleration that most of the killing of the Jews took place off German soil. Because they didn't want the German people to know what was really going on. So we have an obligation to recognize, and particularly people like yourselves who went through this, to speak up and say, this is identical to Nazism. This is not I just comparison. This is Nazism, because public health is Nazism. Nazism is public health. Who's going to be healthy? Who gets to live? Who gets to die? Who's essential? Who's not essential? This is exactly what it is. We have to scream that out, and we have to say to anybody who tries to stop us that they're the real Holocaust deniers. They're the ones that are trying to prevent people from knowing what really happened and what really that we should learn from the tragedy of the lives lost. These people lost their lives. They should be the way to honor their memory is to learn from how they were led to the death. So I want to really focus, and there's going to be a little bit of background noise because there'll be some kids coming in, but that, thank God, we the kids are the main thing. I want to talk about the solution, because we can get very focused, and each one of us can get frightened, can get scared, we can get isolated. We can see that they have such a campaign and it's going on for so many years, and they're able to, the media won't even report on what we're talking about here. The key over here is we have to reach every single human being. And as a lawyer, I believe that lawsuits are very important, but the most important reason for lawsuits is to reach the hearts and the minds of the people, to help them recognize that they are being taken astray and they are in danger. But the real danger is coming from the spiritual problem. The spiritual problem is the issue here. It's not just about the vaccines and the masks and the closing the business. We are in a spiritual problem because God has been taken out of our lives. And we have let that happen. Each one of us has watched as that has happened. And that's what we need to bring back. We need to remoralize the people. The whole war against humanity is through a process of demoralization. Taking away people's connection to a higher power, to a belief in a God that there is something that's right, there is something that's wrong, there is that love, that compassion, which is the right way we're supposed to feel towards humanity, and to replace that with demoral. When you demoralize that, when you take away people, then they become depressed. They don't see any hope. They give in. They're always hoping. They become like the slave mentality. So the way to be free from physical slavery, the Torah tells us, is first you have to be free from spiritual slavery. The Jewish people were slaves in Egypt, and God said to them, take a lamb. The lamb was the symbol, was the actual word. The Egyptians worshiped the lambs, the sheep. And they had to take those lambs, and they had to take it to be slaughtered. And why did they have to do that? They had to send a message to the Egyptian people that the way that everyone, all of humanity has to be freed from slavery is to, first of all, you have to be free spiritually. You have to be able to see that there's nothing in the world besides God Almighty. Nothing exists. Everything is the word of God. God is creating all of us and everything at every instant. And a person might say, well, one second, Rabbi, can't I just get along by saying this tyranny is wrong and we'll talk about liberty without talking about God? And the answer is no. Because once you reduce it just to human logic, once you say, I'm going to come up with a system that's going to be wonderful for humanity, but we're not going to talk about God, then you're only based on your human logic. And that's exactly what the Germans in the 1800s and the early 1900s accomplished by taking God out of the school, which led to the Nazis, because the Nazis were all based on logic. You have to, in order for something to endure and to be true, there has to be the belief and the understanding and the recognition, the vision, to see God's vision for humanity, that he wants a humanity, he wants a world filled with human beings. Not just 8 billion human beings, 80 billion human beings, 800 billion human beings. And while that's going through your head and you're thinking, what's going to be with the water? What's going to be with the space? That's because we've all been filled with these lies of shortage. The cult of scarcity has so much infested us that we might not want to do something bad against people that exist already, but we're still have been inundated with the idea that there's something to be afraid of more people. And the answer is no. God is going to provide for all 800 billion people. We need to free ourselves first. That means all of us here on this conversation, everyone who's watching it. Each one of us has bought into the idea of the cult of scarcity. Each one of us has bought into the cult of experts. So I'll tell you, let's say coronavirus disappears tomorrow. No more coronavirus. Sorry, everyone, it's all over. They're going to come back to us with the climate change. There's not enough air. There's not enough ozone. There's not enough water. And they're already saying the Great Reset, World Economic Forum, there's not enough of everything, they say. So if we focus only on coronavirus, even if we win on coronavirus, we still have not won the war. You were asking before, what's the happy ending of the Maccabees? The happy ending of the Maccabees is when we're going to see the light of Hanukkah, the light of Torah, the light of truth, the light of godliness fill up the whole world. So every single human being knows that he is not only essential, but that it's essential that he brings more human beings into the world. And the level of godly revelation that will come, that will be able to provide for every single one of those human beings, because it's God who's providing the abundance. Remember, in the 1800s, in the 1700s, Malthus said there was not going to be enough space for the human beings then, God forbid. The world population is so much bigger than it was then. I don't know if it's 10 times as big or 15 times as big or whatever. And we still have enough. There's enough food production in the United States if we would take the restrictions off the food production that limit it. There's enough food in just one country to feed the entire world. So if every country was able to produce food properly, we would have an abundance of healthy, nutritious food for every single human being, 800 billion and even more than that. So I want to encourage each one of us to take that to heart, to remoralize the people, to remind people that there is a God Almighty. There's God, a loving God that's taking care of each one of us. There are 7 commandments that God gave to Adam and to Noah, to all of humanity, that not to worship idols, not to curse God when your things are not going well, not to murder, not to be sexually immoral, because the energy, all our inner life energy has to be put into bringing children into the world, not to steal, not to eat the limb of a living animal, and to set up courts of justice to enforce this. All these things come down to the one fundamental principle. If you believe there's enough in the world, you don't have to kill anybody else. You don't have to steal from anybody else. You don't have to take things from other people. When you believe in the God of abundance, when you, God forbid, you fall into the cult of scarcity. That's what Cain and Abel, the first human beings, the two sons of Adam and Eve, one killed the other because he didn't think there was enough love to go around. I see your shirt over there says love on it. One of the people on here. This, when we know that there's enough love from God, when you know there's enough food, we don't have to take from anybody else. We don't have to feel that sense of pressure that we have to fight to survive, because we know that God is taking care of us. So this is really the message for all of humanity. This is what we need to focus on now. I believe that in conjunction with bringing the truth to attention to people's eyes, to see how they've been fooled and led astray. But the fooling and being led astray comes from a spiritual weakness, that you could be afraid of what's in the air, that you could think that the government is going to take care of you, that you could put your trust in experts because someone's got to solve the problem for you. We're now, you're already in the time of, as I said before, the eighth day of Hanukkah. We're in the last day of Hanukkah. We're going now into the Shabbat, which is the day that God rested from all of creation. And I think it starts already at 4 o'clock in Germany, so you'll be starting even ahead of us. But the key is, this is really a lesson, a reminder for all of humanity that God worked for 6 days, and on the seventh day he said, you guys can all relax. I'm taking care of everything for you. You don't have to go to work. You don't have to check your phones. You don't have to look at the message, what the news is. Doesn't matter what the government is, who's saying what, because God's taking care of it for all of us. We have to remember that, and particularly those of us who are here that are taking so seriously our responsibility for humanity and to help other human beings. We get so involved in it, it's stressful because we see what's happening, the falsehood that's being spread and so forth, and the danger. But we need to lead the way by remembering that God Almighty is in charge. He is providing for us. He's provided for humanity from the very beginning. And he's taken care of me and you and each one of you from your conception till now in everything you've needed. And he will continue to do that. He'll continue to do that for all 8 billion, 80 billion, 800 billion human beings. And when we lead the way by showing that by example, I want to encourage each of you today to reflect on this, to increase in your recognition of God's role in your life, to express gratitude that God is giving you breath. Every breath counts. That's why we don't wear a mask, because every breath is from God Almighty. But it has to be a place of not fighting against the government. It has to be, I don't wear a mask because I'm grateful to God. It's a place of gratitude, a place of showing example. Reach out to your parents, honoring our fathers and mothers. This is something that a war is being made against that right now by putting people in nursing homes. We can't visit them. Reach out to people, help your parents, give them a phone call. And then, as I said before, we've got to bring more children into the world. Those of you who are able to, bring more children into the world. Those of you that are, whatever the reason is, encourage other people to bring more children into the world. Support them, help them, hold the baby that's crying. If a woman is concerned about the finances, whether she can have a child or not, help her out financially. Provide her the diapers, provide her the crib, provide her whatever she needs. Encourage people, bring to their attention that they're worthy, they're created in God's image, and they're so valuable, they deserve to bring new children into the world that will be just like them. So I want to bless you all, and I'm happy to stay for any questions if you'd like, but bless you all with the tremendous, tremendous responsibility. When we speak, someone said to me, a rabbi sent his son to speak to me and said, my father wants you to know that every time you open your mouth, you're saving countless human lives. And that applies to each one of us here. We're sitting in a room, we're sitting with a few people here, but whatever we say spreads into the world. And I want to encourage with you and give you that blessing that no matter how difficult it may look, and they say now that there may be shutdowns of the internet and shutdowns of electricity, we can never give up, because that little bit of light, that little bit of oil that we have, that purity of recognition that it's all from God, and when we clear out our own heads and our own hearts from every way that we've been influenced by this same cult of scarcity, and we let the God of abundance into our lives, we are able to reach out to every single human being, and nothing will stop God's vision from coming to reality, which is the vision that all of humanity is going to serve God, recognize God, be grateful for God. All humanity is going to be celebrating together the great revelation of what we call Mashiach, of the times of the redemption when the entire world is going to recognize that everything's really okay. God's taking care of us. God's providing for us. And just enjoy the incredible realization that the recognition of that there's nothing besides God. That's the ultimate purpose of humanity. And I want to send you a blessing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And all the children.
I'm going to translate, and then we have one of our Canadian colleagues who's also a spiritual leader. He's been listening, and since he speaks English, of course, he will probably tell you that that's exactly what he thinks too. But let me first translate this.